Welcome in to the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. I'm Ross Geiger, joined alongside Bruce Bernstein of Pure Hoops Media and World B, Michael Freer. This is episode number 54, the Rodney Rogers episode, as Mr. Rogers wore number 54 for quite a few different neighborhoods throughout his 12 seasons in the NBA. But I'll most remember his time in my neighborhood, earning the Sixth Man of the Year award as a member of the Phoenix Suns during the 1999-2000 season. Bruce, I know that we got a very special guest joining us on tonight's show, so I'll let you go ahead and take over the introductory honors.
Thank you, Ross. Mark J. Spears, where do we begin? We'll start with, he's a Hall of Famer, the winner of the Kurt Gowdy Media Award, which means he'll be inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield later this summer. It's the most prestigious honor possible for media members who've made outstanding contributions to the world of basketball. Mark covered the Denver Nuggets beat from 99 to 07 at the Denver Post, the Celtics beat for the Boston Globe from 07 to 09, was a national writer for Yahoo Sports from 2009 to 2015, and he joined the Undefeated at ESPN in 2015. The Undefeated, now known as Anscape, and Mark continues to crush it there. He's also a TV personality and was one of my go-to guys back in my ESPN days. And besides all of that, he was a baller. In college, graduated from San Jose State, master's degree from LSU, recipient of an honorary doctorate degree from Langston College in Oklahoma, and we'll be discussing some of Mark's memorable career moments later in the show, but we want to jump right in with the news of the moment. Welcome, Dr. Spears.
Bruce, thanks for having me, man, and I just wanted to give you a shout-out first and foremost, man. When I first got to ESPN, there were certain people that, you know, when you arrive at ESPN, it could be a little intimidating, right? And you're going to the highest level in terms of sports media and most attention. And Bruce was one of the people that put his arm around me and basically said, you're here because you're supposed to be here. You're an asset to the company and you're going to do great things. And so I always, you know, he knows I love him. And every time I see him, I could be going 100 miles per hour, but I'm going to stop and pay homage. So just thank you for everything, man, because you didn't have to do that. And a lot of people didn't do it, but you did. So I always got love for you, bro.
You humbled me with your words, and I love you, too. You're a brother in the basketball family, always have been, always will be. But I got to start out with one thing before we dive into the world of basketball at the moment. When you got that call about Springfield, You got to tell me, what was that like?
Oh, man. I guess a little secret is I've been part of a TV show that's filming that's not even about sports, really. And I don't know if I could divulge everything, but I could say that. And we were filming in New York, and we just happened to be on a break. And I was in my little room relaxing, waiting for the next thing we had to do, and John DeLiva called. And I knew I was being considered. But when he, I mean, why else he calling me? Like, right. So, but until he says it, it's not real. And I think my only regret is like, you have people that like, I don't know. Like, do they tell John DeLiva to call back so they can film it? You know what I mean? Like, I didn't have it on film or anything like that. So, but it's just surreal. And it still is. Like every time I hear somebody like yourself say Hall of Famer, man, it warms my heart. It feels amazing. And like the ceremony is August 11th. I still got to do my speech. But it's like just them announcing it at All-Star. That's kind of where it hit even harder. You know what I mean? Cause that was on live television. You know, my wife was there, and so it was great that she was a part of it. And, I kind of choked up, and that's not really my style when they brought me on stage and asked me a couple questions. Cause like for somebody that like loved basketball, but couldn't play in the NBA to make it here. Like, man, you don't know how like amazing that is to me. They could put my name in the bathroom. They could put my name in a closet somewhere, but my name's in there, right? Like, it's in there. And I played college basketball, but basketball as a journalist got me there. Using my writing ability got me there. So it's still kind of stunning and incredible. And I've been talking to my friends about getting there, you know, coming out to Springfield and the Mohegan Sun, which aren't the easiest place to get to, but just the fact that, like, especially my mom is super excited about this. Like, it's just, I don't really know. I know I'm like rambling on because I think it all culminates on August 11th. That's when it really, really like truly hit me. Like, I'm like, this is what you dream of as a kid, but you don't dream of it as a kid this way. So I think that's what makes it really, really special to me.
You know, before, I know Russ wants to jump in, but I just want to say, I actually predicted this. I'm writing a book about my career. It's called, I'm working with an editor. And
you got to appreciate all this water, right?
Absolutely. I got it right here, right? So I was writing, one of the chapters is about all of the great journalists that I've worked with, you know? And I've worked with several Kurt Gowdy Media Award winners. I've worked with David Aldridge. I've worked with Mark Stein. I've worked with Mike Breen. I've worked with Doris Burke. There's probably some others that I'm leaving out. And I said, and I'm going to predict that Mark J. Spears will eventually win that award. Now, the book hasn't been published yet, so I can't prove it.
I didn't see that.
When right. It hasn't come out. But I did
have tweeted to it out. I ought to retweet it.
I did have to rewrite the chapter, right? Because I'm sending it to the editor. Because now it's like, well, I can't predict it anymore because it happened.
Well, you can say that you did.
It would actually be true. But the point being, you were stamped for greatness from way before you knew me. So I'm just so proud to be your friend, your brother, your colleague, and everything you've got, you've totally deserved. And God bless you is all I got to say.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
Go ahead,
you
Ross.
Know what, it's, one thing, too, that is interesting about the Hall of Fame that I think a lot of people forget, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn here or anything like that, but just, you know, it. I think a lot of people just think about that I covered NBA, but I also covered college basketball. And I had the amazing opportunity out of college to cover Nolan Richardson, man. My first job was covering the University of Arkansas's football and basketball team for the Tulsa World, and I covered them from 95 to 97. Also covered Cal State Northridge basketball for a season. But then I also did University of Louisville and Kentucky basketball for 2 years before I started covering NBA. So I covered Denny Crum and Tubby Smith. So before I even got to the NBA, I got to cover Nolan Richardson, Denny Crum, and Tubby Smith. Like, come on, man. Like, is so it was like, after you cover those three coaches, I ain't scared of Pop. Well, maybe a little bit, but you know what I mean? Like, I got Nolan Richardson out the door, man. And
40 minutes of hell, baby.
Yeah, man, that was incredible. I remember Denny Crum. I'll tell this quick story. God rest his soul, man. I had I'm going to blame Pat Forty for this. You know, Louisville got in all this trouble in the late 90s for NCAA sanctions and stuff like that. You guys probably remember. And so I started doing some of their games or covering their team. And Denny Crum was so, like, mad at the Courier-Journal that he – like, locked me out of practice at the Paul. I remember they were practicing at the Paul, and he didn't let me in. And I think somebody told him, like, man, this kid ain't got nothing to do with it, man. You ain't got to be a jerk to him, man. And eventually he was like, all right, he's okay. He let his guard down with me. But, like, Denny Crum was a gem to be around. Tubby couldn't have been nicer. Nolan was like a father to me, man. I love Nolan Richardson. And so that kind of gave me a really nice, you know, foundation before I in basketball history, before I even covered NBA. I remember interviewing Tubby Smith in this long room, this, like, you know, meeting room, and there was an Adolph Rupp like bust at the end of the room staring at him, which is really strange, but it certainly was incredible covering those guys.
Well, Mark, thanks for joining us. It's an honor to have you on the 48 Minutes podcast. Definitely want to talk some ball with you, but before we get into it any deeper, we do need to let our listeners know that BetOnline is your number one source for all your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and the latest matchup reports for baseball, boxing, golf, and more. BetOnline continues to be the fastest and easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your phone. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and get in on the action. Remember to use promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. And Mark, we wanted to start picking your brain with the latest headlines around the association these days. And of course, Victor Wembanyama officially introduced as a member of the San Antonio Spurs. You had mentioned Pop and not being afraid to talk to him. So really curious on what you thought about kind of his first couple of days with the San Antonio Spurs, which included that dinner with Spurs legends David Robinson, Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, and Sean Elliott. And, you know, what's your take on Victor thus far, having covered, obviously, the college game, plenty of rookies throughout your years working in the NBA? And would you agree that San Antonio is just like a perfect landing spot for a guy like this?
Well, I'm going to take you back to Las Vegas or Henderson, okay. Nevada, where he played against the G League Knight. And I was kind of waiting on Victor because Tony Parker had told me about him a while ago. I'd actually gone to France a couple years ago to watch Lyon, Tony's team, play. And he was like, hey, I remember there's a kid that's on I believe he's on the Hornets now, that was like young on Tony's team at the time. Tony's like, hey, man, there's this other kid, like this 7'3" kid. Yeah, okay, sure. But he kept like kind of telling me about it. Then it got big, and like I made sure I was in Henderson, Nevada when he arrived, because I knew. And I remember I was telling people, like, yo, this is a big deal. And they're like, yeah, okay. I'm like, I'm telling you, this is a huge, huge deal, to the point where I told three of my friends, fly out to come watch this kid. Trust me.
Yeah.
And they did. They flew out to Vegas to go watch him play. And I just remember the first time I laid eyes on him at a practice, I was like, wow, he's every bit of height as what they said he is. And he has the humor, and he has the charisma, and he has the swag. I remember the line he had was, you know, if I wasn't in this draft, Scoot Henderson would probably be number one. I'll never forget he said that. And the thing was like, he's right. Like, yep. It was like, what are you going to say? You know, French people tell the truth, right?
Yeah.
I remember the guy from Cheers, who was French, who kept telling Woody he was going to steal his girlfriend, right? Like, they just straightforward, right? And Bruce got that one, right?
Yeah. I'm actually old enough, yeah.
Yeah. but I was like, okay, he seems to have it all: hype, charisma, humility, love to talk to the media. Let me see him play. Man, he stepped on the court, and I was like this the whole time. and I'm not like that. I don't get impressed that easy. I felt like I saw one of the wonders of the world. And I keep telling people now, even like I was telling this guy the other day, I said, you have to see him in person for it to make sense. Like, seeing it on TV, like y'all understand the eye test, right?
Yep.
You have to see it in person for it to make sense to you. So to see him cross people over, step back, and shoot a three at 7'5", come on, man. Like, the mid-range jumper is unstoppable. Then he cares about defense, block shots. But one line afterwards stood out to me. I talked to C.J. McCollum, and he's like, you went and saw him play, right? I did a diary on C.J. last season. I'm like, yeah. He goes, he made 7 of 11 threes. In that first game, he's like, I don't know how many NBA players in a gym by themselves can make 7 of 11 three-pointers. He did that in his first NBA-sanctioned game. It's like, yeah, that's pretty incredible. And so, I mean, I guess that you have to find a knock. The only knock is that he's slim, and that's a big knock. But I get the sense, like, he's going to end up filling out kind of like David Robinson.
Okay.
You know, I think he – some scouts told me that he has a build – that will be able to put on some weight, some strength. Not like, you know, Shaq, but more so slender build. You know, if you remember, like, David Robinson was pretty slim when he came in, but he bulked up, and I don't know if this kid's going to, like, bulk up, but I do think in today's NBA, you know, like, with the bigger court than he played in Europe, rare that you see zones. I mean, he could shoot somebody out of a zone. Like, it's not like the 80s NBA where he's going to get hit over the head every 2 minutes, right? There will be some people that perhaps try to take advantage of his lack of size defensively, but he's a problem when he walks in the door.
Absolutely. I mean, he's a guy that makes Rudy Gobert look 6'9", and as you said, with the eye test, you have to really be there because the way he moves, you just can't really – comprehend that he's legitimately 7'5" because he moves like he's a 6'8" wing.
He's not a giant. He's not like Yao, right?
Yeah.
He's not like Ostertag. You know, even like Dikembe, who was a pretty athletic, like he kind of like he could get up and down the floor, man. Like Shaq was able to get up and down the floor in a freakish kind of way. Wilt Chamberlain, right? But And then maybe in time he'll have a Wilt kind of build, right? But this is a unicorn, man. This is something different. Yeah, I know. I've heard Bol Bol and Porzingis comparisons, but this is different. I feel like this is different, and it's different defensively too.
I would totally agree with you there, Mark. And one question I asked last show, and I'd be very curious to get your take is. You know, I think a lot of people think, well, he's 7'5". You know, he's going to get some minutes at the five this year. I think it's actually the opposite. I think he's going to obviously start more as a four, but then we're going to see more glimpses of him trying out the small forward position than we would the center. Would you agree in this first year they're going to try him out a little bit more at wing than they would ever consider him a five?
I don't know that. Yeah, I think we just assume they're going to throw him in the post. Like,
yeah,
and he could do that. How do you block his turnaround jumper, right? How do you stop Dirk when he was playing? Dirk wasn't really in the post, but if he wanted to, he could hit a turnaround jumper on you. I just think he's so tall. Like, they just showed him, like, in San Antonio, like, he dunked a ball with, like, on his tippy toes.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. You're not going to be – if he doesn't succeed offensively, it's because of him. And that's the same one player I feel like with that is Durant. If Durant misses, it's because he missed. Dirk misses, it's because he missed. If Wemby misses, it's because he missed. But the difference is, Ross, I think defensively he will be a five.
Okay. Because
you can't tell me, man, when somebody's going to the basket that you ain't thinking about it.
Yeah. Like, you absolutely are.
What is his wingspan? Like 8-something?
Yeah.
8'11" or something like that, like
something ridiculous.
You got to think about it when you're going up for a layup. So I know there's just so much fascination about him offensively, but defensively, like, he could end up being a defensive player of the year candidate if he's getting an obscene amount of blocks every game.
No doubt about that. And from one dominant five potentially to the one that's currently just killing the game in Nikola Jokic. Wanted to ask you about this Denver title run. You know, we have talked about on our show here how timeless of a game the Joker does have and how he could be playing like this for the next 10 years, no problem. He doesn't jump high. You know, he passes the ball well. He's not already, you know, he's not that athletic. He just makes the right plays and is smooth and effective with all the decisions that he makes out there on the floor, whether it be pass, shoot, dribble. He's got the whole package there. So I wanted to start by asking you, where would you rank him all time? I think we're really, you know, with the ring now, we're getting to that conversation of where he would rank all time with the two MVPs, yeah, a finals MVP now to add to the resume there. Can you at least give us a range where you see him going or where you'd put him?
Well, you have to me, like, I just like, let's just throw a big man out there, right? So Dirk had one, right? How many did Tim have?
Five.
Yeah. How many did Shaq have?
Four.
Four.
How many did Russ have?
11.
How many did David Robinson have?
Two.
So to me, like, he's in the Pat Ewing, like, kind of like Dirk class, I think, right now.
Okay.
But if you want me to put him next to Shaq and, you know, Russ is in a different world. But like David Robinson, Tim Duncan, those kind of guys, like, you need more titles, man. I'm sorry. And he's in the room. Shaq room's a different room. Bill Russell's in a mansion by himself.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so, to me, like, I just like to talk about bigs. You at least need like three titles to me before we start talking about just goats amongst the bigs.
Okay, fair enough there. So you said he needs more titles. So my next question is actually, what do you think about Denver's chances to repeat? Do you like their chances of doing so with the core that they have? I mean, obviously they're going to be returning most of their guys. I think the only big one in question is Bruce Brown. Yes.
Yeah.
Bruce Brown.
Sounds like Bruce Brown wants to be back. And then you got to think about this too, in terms of like their minimum free agents. When you get into the potential championship world where players see you that way, and Denver has now done that by not only winning, but kind of just like getting over the hump was big. Just getting to the finals, I thought, was huge for the franchise, let alone winning. I think they get a different caliber of minimum free agents now. So I do think, as great as I thought their bench was pretty great. Like, if Reggie Jackson's chilling and DeAndre Jordan's chilling, like, you got a really good bench to me.
Yeah. Right?
Like, a lot of teams could use those two guys, you know. Shoot, maybe Reggie could have started for a few teams, right? But so I think they'll even do better in free agency. To me, it's health. It's health. If Joker's never had no real health issues, but like Michael Porter Jr.'s had four back surgeries, and I don't take that part lightly, like that he's had that. You know, Jamal Murray seems certainly fine, but to continue to win, you need health first, you need talent second, and I think you need some luck. Right.
Definitely it's some luck on your side.
So I think the Nuggets, like, they just, in terms of luck, I think that's health and luck. They were both, you know, very lucky in that regard. They never really had any major injury issues. And so I think they are poised to certainly make a run for a title, make a title run for many years to come, to be in the mix many years to come. But one thing we can't predict is health.
Hey, Mark, I got a question. You know, sticking with the Nuggets for a second, they had one of the great playoff runs, at least in the last 20 years, you know, the way they went through the whole league. But they also came up almost immediately after winning the title. They came under some sort of criticism by people because of the opponents they played. I think they played 2 8 seeds, a 7 seed, and a 4 seed. I'm not in the group that is critical of the competition that they played, because, you know, they did play the Suns with KD, they did play the Lakers with AD and LeBron and so on. But what's your thoughts on, you know, you heard the criticism, it was almost immediately after they won the title, or even before, they were already when it looked like they were going to win, there were critics out there kind of poo-pooing this run and trying to make it illegitimate in some way, but I disagree. I was just kind of wondering about your thoughts on that.
Well, one of my favorite hip hop sayings is, if they ain't hating, you ain't popping. So I don't care who they played against. They could have played against some Transformers and somebody would have found a way to, you know, to get them. They can only play against who they play against, right? Yep. Like, it's not their fault. But I'll tell you what, they had the best record in the Western Conference the whole season. And it wasn't even like, I mean, what, New Orleans maybe jumping there for a heartbeat or something like that, or a couple other teams did, right?
They dominated the conference, absolutely.
But they basically were either amongst the front of the race, but they were leading that race like the whole year. And in fact, I think I said a few times in some other interviews, like, they're supposed to be in the finals. They're supposed to do this. And they did it. And yep. So my respect for them and what they did is extremely high. Because they, having covered the Nuggets for 8 years, if there's one, I think, thing I wish that could have been done more, and I tried to do it, is the history of the Nuggets franchise be told. And that, like, I, in a lot of ways, was like, I'm not picking them because something always goes wrong. They're like the Clippers. Something always goes wrong. And it wasn't that I didn't believe that they had the talent to do it. Just felt like Murphy's Law was going to catch him again. And it didn't this time. There were no injuries. There wasn't nothing crazy that happened. And they did it. And so I ain't got nothing but respect for them cats, man. They're good. I think like, they could have swept Miami.
Yeah.
They didn't sweep Miami because, and this is respectful to Miami, even though maybe Heat fans would think otherwise, they were too busy taking their foot off the gas, getting too comfortable. That was one knock I had against them in the finals, is if they continue to put their foot on the gas, they would have won game two that they lost?
Yes.
They won that game. They were up by like 15. They were joking around with it. And that's why, like, Jeff Green was valuable for him. Like, I remember hearing his audio and he's yelling, like, don't play with the game. Don't play with the game. And they won it in five. And so, no, I ain't got nothing but respect for me. They're the champs for real.
I think most fans around the league are happy for the Nuggets because they're a very likable bunch. I mean, they play hard, they play physical, but they play clean. You don't see them getting flagrant fouls. You don't see them, you know, making dirty plays. They're just an ideal kind of group of guys, and you got to be happy for them.
Another Bruce, guy, I'll say this real quick is one thing I was happy to see too is, like, all the assumptions that because this isn't a top five, you know, top three, top five market team, that the ratings weren't going to do well. Like, nobody wants to see the Nuggets. Nobody wants to see Miami. The ratings were great. And I was like, good. That means they wanted to see good basketball.
Yep.
That's that, you know, that showed me that we're underestimating today's basketball fan.
I want to ask you a quick question because we want to talk about Anscape in a few minutes. But before we get to that, Damian Lillard, that whole situation just gets a little bit stranger each day that goes by. Yeah. Does he want, what are his feelings? What does he want to do? What's the team going to do? It's really very puzzling to me. And again, nothing against Dame, because Dame has shown his loyalty to Portland countless times over the years. So I don't have any beef at all with Dame, but it almost seems like he doesn't know what he wants to do. On the one hand, he wants to stay because he's a loyal guy and he's Mr. Trailblazer. But on the other hand, I think he knows he's not going to win there. I mean, what's your take on that whole situation?
No, I think he knows what he wants to do. He wants to play for a competitive team. And if you look at their roster, you know, Jeremy Grant's still a free agent. It's uncertain that it's a competitive team.
Yeah.
I think he has no problems with staying in Portland his whole career, championship or not. Like, he loves it there. His family lives there. He's very comfortable there. Probably will live there after his playing days are over. But I think he's also smart enough to realize that, you know, the light is starting to turn on at the end of the tunnel. And it would probably be excruciating for him to be on a team that can't win anything. I'm not even talking about championship, like just even contend for the playoffs. And respectfully, that team in as tough as the Western Conference is not. So I don't think he's if that roster a month from now isn't competitive, I could see him gone.
I was quite surprised.
I don't subscribe to the fact that like it's Damian Lillard. I think teams are going to do what they want to do in free agency and they ain't going to wait for him, but it's Damian Lillard. You figure out a way to get the elites, right? When was James Harden traded? Right? Like, wasn't he like, who was the one that was like traded at the beginning of the season? Like, right. Was it James Harden? Right.
It was James Harden to Brooklyn. Yeah,
to Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Like, and everybody knew he wanted to be traded. Still got traded. He's James Harden.
Yeah.
And I think the same will be the case for Damian Lillard as well, regardless to whether it's tomorrow or a month from now. But I think he has to be given credit for actually having the patience to see what they will do.
Okay.
He's like, hey, from what I'm hearing, like, if you guys can put a competitive team here, let's go. So it's, I think the pressure is really on Portland and their general manager right now to either put a team together or, you know, start the rebuilding process without them.
And one more before we go ahead and take our halftime break here. I know that you, of course, have a very good relationship with Draymond Green. And obviously, big question marks with what might happen in Golden State this summer with the decisions that they have on their plate, with Mike Dunleavy taking over, having to go ahead and figure all that out. But no, knowing him better than most, Mark, you know, would you be shocked if he didn't resign with the Warriors? You know, I've heard some rumors to Phoenix, other places. I think he was even on Dame's list in Portland. But do you think he resigns?
I think he does his due diligence. But the fact that, look, and I've seen crazier things in free agency. Let me preface that, right? I mean, anything is certainly possible. But I don't know that you make that Jordan Poole move to clear up that money if you think he's leaving. Right.
Yeah.
You could do that move later. While the timing of the Jordan Poole move is certainly curious to him staying, or leans to me that he's staying. The fact that you've heard Chris Paul in interviews talk about Draymond.
Yeah.
He doesn't if I've not heard him say, and look, I haven't heard all his interviews, but not once has it been, well, if Draymond stays.
Yeah. It's
Steph, Clay, Draymond. Steph, Clay, Draymond. So I'd be stunned. The Warriors got the money to pay him. What are they willing to pay him? And then I think there's also, in terms of knowing him, he's been around long enough to talk to teammates who have departed and realize the grass isn't greener in most places. It's not even an isn't always situation here. The grass isn't greener than Golden State in most places. So you want to start from scratch in a place where perhaps the players aren't treated the same. It's not quite the same enthusiasm. You don't have a chance to win a championship. Like, you know, where staying is not a bad thing, right? He could potentially have a statue outside of that arena one day. And I believe there should be a Clay, Steph, Draymond statue together, the three of them. Maybe Steph's in front, in the middle, but I definitely think they deserve something really, really special one day. And if they want him to stay, like he told me in one of the last things he said is, man, I've been here for 11 years, and that means something. So my guess is he'll probably be around.
Gotcha there. Definitely looking forward to seeing
you. Kiss of death, baby. That's the kiss of death.
And with that, we've gone ahead and reached our halftime buzzer. So we're going to take a quick break and come back with you for the second half. And we're back. We're back already.
I'm
yeah.
going to eat my snacks, man. I go went ahead. To the bathroom and everything. I thought, you know.
We've got our own version here at the 48-minute show.
I thought we were filming this in Miami.
Yeah.
eating and drinking is allowed on the 48 Minutes podcast. Okay. I mean, we're making, I can tell you already, we're going into overtime on this one. There's just too much to talk about with you. I mean, hopefully you'll indulge us.
I went to the bathroom. I talked to a couple people out in the mezzanine lobby.
Hey, I want to talk a little bit about Anscape. We got a lot of other stuff we want to get to. But first of all, I have a question, and maybe I should know the answer to this, but I don't. It started out as the Undefeated, and it became Anscape. Can you tell me the story around the name change?
Am I allowed to tell this story?
If you can't, it's okay.
I'm going to tell this story, and then I need you to hit the PR guy for Manscape and ask him if it's okay to run my version.
Wait a minute. Time out. I don't want to risk that. I don't want to risk
that. Yeah, let's not do that.
I don't want to risk that. But let's put it this
way.
But
no, I'll just.
I don't want you to get in trouble. I don't want you to get in trouble.
I just think that there's another entity that had a similar name that made things a little difficult for us to use our name the way that we wanted to.
Understood.
And gotcha. I think if you kind of hear what I'm saying, it'll make sense. And it was more beneficial for us to change the name because the previous name was already being used by somebody else.
Okay. Does that make sense? It does.
Yes.
And I want to move forward and talk about some of the stuff that's on Anscape by Mark J. Spears. The Scoot Henderson's gym clip was really cool. The story
you like
about
that, Bruce? I trust your judgment, man.
That was some unbelievable narration by you. I mean, seriously, that was like, somebody's become a TV pro because that was like, you weren't quite James Earl Jones quality, but you were just a little step below that level, which is still pretty damn good. All right. I love the piece. I loved his family. I mean, everybody in the mom was a riot. I mean, she was great.
This is what he wanted.
Exactly. Exactly.
You're going to cry. I know you're going to cry, though.
That was so funny. I was just going to say, and then you did the piece on the G League Ignite, how it's changing the world of professional basketball. Do you generate these ideas yourself? I mean, is this like, because the pieces that you do on there, man, you just crush it.
Well, thank you, man. I'm glad you appreciate that. I try to be two steps ahead of the posse with my ideas. And I got that line from Jeff Bozdelic. I like using that line. Just always do something that's unique. Always do something that's different. And I really think, and you guys could tell me that I'm wrong, like the fan wants to know more than whether they can make a jumper or how many points they can score. They care to know about them as people.
Yes.
And what makes them tick and what is it like behind the scenes? Like, we're all curious about what it's like to be with these guys behind the scenes. And so, like, I knew Scoot was special before he, right when he got to the Ignite. And his first year, they're actually down the street from me. I live in the Oakland area. They're in Walnut Creek. So I would go see him, and everybody's like, I was asking Pooh Jeter, got a cup of coffee in the NBA. He's been pro basketball for a long time. Who's the one? Who's the one, Scoot? Who's the one, Pooh? Scoot. Make sure you get to know Scoot. Josh Hart, Scoot. Get to know Scoot. Jason Hart, I'm sorry. The coach. And so, he was 17 at the time, which is remarkable for a 17-year-old to go and play in a professional league. Like, he misses prom. He misses senior year of high school to go do this. And he had like 28 in a game against G League people when he was a senior in high school. Like, come on, man. That's special. But then the more I got to know him, I got to meet his family. Like, incredible. I did a piece with him last year. There's actually another video where we talked to him and his family in Cleveland And then that's where I got to learn about the gym and how important that gym was to him. But you're talking about not only a great player, but so people know, like a high caliber person, a Steph Curry kind of character. When he got his Puma deal, he got the sizes of all his teammates and all his coaches and had like five pairs of shoes and five outfits sent to all of them.
Wow.
At the team residence. Unsolicited. I want to thank you for being a part of my journey. Who does that?
Very cool.
It would be on commuter planes. Sometimes he'd be, you know, and he was getting paid pretty good now. He's getting the top G League money, right? Or Ignite money. And he would be in the middle row, sitting in the middle of a row. Said he didn't complain. Just grinned and bared it. Could have easily complained about that. I would have complained about that. They have a really good, you know, like staff and Ernie D. Los Angeles, one of their guys on their staff told me, he said Scoop would take bags after games, like the team equipment, and help me with it and bring it to the bus. Like, come on, man. Like, what player does that, right? That's the kind of guy he is. That's, and like, I could go on and on, but like the last thing that stood out to me, the day before the NBA draft, the Ignite, which the story you mentioned, Bruce, they bring players to the draft. Next year, they're projected to have the number one and two picks in the draft. And those kids are there and like some potential recruits for the future there. They all come to draft because they want them to see it. They want them to get extra inspiration. Like, you're going to be in that green room. They give them a tour of the green room. They put them in a suite, and they could dare to dream even more. They could smell it. And they did that for Scoot last year. So the night before the draft, do you think Scoot had a lot going on?
Oh, yeah.
They were having dinner at a place called, a really popular place called Brooklyn Chop House. The players. Scoot went and talked to him the night before the draft.
Wow.
That tells you what you need. I mean, like, did he have to do that? Would it have been okay if he didn't? Sure. He's stay before the draft. No, he made a point to go speak to them. And that's the kind of character person that Portland is getting.
Mark, were you surprised the Hornets didn't take him at two? I know the whole LaMelo, and I get all that, and I'm not saying Brandon Miller's not going to work out. I'm just curious your thoughts.
No, World B, I get you. I wasn't surprised because Charlotte never seems to surprise me with some of their moves, man.
Like, I was waiting.
You know
for
what
that
I mean? Like, and I'm not trying to throw shade on them.
They have a track record.
I think it's like Brandon's a great player. He's going to be a great player. So I think they – are you taking a risk getting Scoop? Does he not fit their team? Like, it is like – I think they had a good problem. They could have went – it could have went either way. I'm sure both franchises are happy, right? So, I mean, it's like – picking between a Ferrari and a Lamborghini, right? Like, can you really go wrong?
Yeah.
So I think they were good either way. But
let me ask you this real quick. Getting back to the association and stuff, real quick, were you surprised Marcus Smart got traded?
Stunned. I think he was obviously the two Jays are the most talented players, but Marcus Smart is the heart and soul of that team. Like, he's the engine that pulls that train, right? I know they got a couple of VIP carts on that train, but he's the engine. And so you lost a lot of your soul with that. I don't know that they needed to really do anything that dramatic.
I agree.
You know, I just think you have a new coach. It's a rookie head coach who I think is going to be a great coach, who's trying to figure out his way. you lose Damon Stoudemire as an assistant during the season, then you got a bunch of other assistants who believe they're probably like lame duck situation. So they got to, you know, they're like short timers. Like, so the coaching staff was in disarray. I think they should have done a better job of putting the right people around, you know, the head coach there after, you know, Udoka didn't come back. Like, I think that was a mistake by the Celtic front office to, I think they gave him the support he deserved. And then to me, like, the playoffs was just like, they didn't take them serious enough. They didn't take Miami serious enough, and then it was a steamroll. And they still could have won the series. Like, do they, if the Celtics would have made the finals, so they're a game away from making the finals, do they make that trade? Kind of think it was a panic move.
Yeah, I don't think they
like,
get to
do they need more they scoring? Like, you know what I might have did is just left the team alone and saw how Gallinari did as a scorer off the bench. Like, I didn't get the sense that they needed really that extra oomph offensively, right? So, but I'll tell you what a hell of a move by Memphis.
Yeah.
Like, because not only you get a great character, mature OG in the locker room who's going to tell you to be more, you know, let's not do it this way, guys. Let's win first and celebrate later. Like, that's Marcus Smart. Like, he's going to be a great guy next to Ja Morant, especially with everything Ja's going through. It's going to be a godsend for him.
I'll say one quick thing about that. You used the perfect term to talk about Marcus Smart. I've always described him as the emotional engine of that team. He is literally, he was like the spirit animal for every guy on that team. And he was the guy who would get up in Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum's face and tell him, you have to do more. You have to do this. He was not afraid. So I think the effect that he's going to have on Ja Morant with that sort of, you know, veteran kind of leadership is going to do wonders for Ja Morant. I think Ja Morant, after being around Marcus Smart, is going to be a much better, you know, much have advanced himself so much as a result of the influence of Marcus Smart.
Yeah. And you know, you, Bruce, you guys, I mean, you're in the Northeast, man. Like, seemed like Massachusetts was crushed. Seems like Celtics Nation was crushed. Like, didn't really understand where that came from.
I'm with a lot of Celtics fans on Twitter. I engage with them a lot. And we were all like,
why?
It's it really hurt. Yeah. It hurt because we love Marcus Smart.
Yeah.
We love him. Yeah. We love him on the team. I never had a problem with some of the questionable shots that he took because I always knew no matter he could take five terrible threes in a row, but he still was a plus because of everything else he did.
Well, you know what? It's going to be on Malcolm Brogdon to be that guy now, to be the guy that's going to say something. And I know Malcolm doesn't have any problem with that, but then he has a health issue now, right? Which has kind of been a little mysterious, right?
You know, give him the minutes. They don't even sixth man a year. They still didn't give him a ton of minutes on the court. You know, certainly not compared to some of the others.
I was kind of not that I don't think Porzingis, like if Porzingis plays well, that's a crazy number three.
Yeah,
that's, you know, scoring wise, you're as intimidating as perhaps that big three, the big threes we've seen in Celtics lore in the past. Right. But, God, you might be great scorer now, but that soul left. Oh, yeah. It left.
Well, Mark, one thing we want to do here before we wrap up this, phenomenal conversation with you here today is, play a game with you called Word Association, where I'm going to give you a player and then we'll definitely let Bruce and World B throw one at you. If you could give us the first word that comes to mind, and if you want to kind of break it down a little bit, feel free to. But I'll go ahead and start off with it with an easy one for me, for you, and that is Kobe Bryant.
Oh, man.
Wasn't that easy, I guess.
Nah, because that one hurts still.
Yeah. Okay.
Just what's the word?
Devastation?
No. The word is no. I'm be positive here. I'm not thinking okay. about the darkness. I'm thinking about the light. You know how like wordless, like there's no words for how amazing he is or was on and off the floor. You know, I was always in awe watching him. He was top three most intimidating players I've ever seen. And I saw Jordan in person. So, in Shaq in his prime, like Kobe Bryant was just amazing. And I think perhaps what he doesn't get enough credit for, we talk about so much about how incredible he was as a player and as a competitor, but he had some compassion. That's what I think about when I think of him is, you know, he cared about, if he knew you, he cared about you as a person. And I remember after Hurricane Katrina, he played in a charity game, and I didn't really know him that well at the time. And played in a charity game in Houston, and he came up to me. He's like, "Man, how's your family doing?" I'm like, "How do you know my family's displaced?" Don't worry about all that. How are they doing? Like, he was that kind of guy. He would check on you. And I remember when I was changing jobs to go to ESPN, he was privy, like he was asking me about where my happiness was and what I was trying to do with my career. Like, who asked you that? Like, Tommy Shepard, the former Wizards GM, he said, he told me, he was like, "Man, if you're waiting for a hug from an NBA player, you're wasting your time." Kobe Bryant gave you that hug. He truly cared about the people. If he loved you, if you were in his like realm. And the one thing he was masterful at, I saw Ali. Am I going too long? We got a time limit?
No, you're good.
No, keep it rolling, baby.
When I was in Louisville, Kentucky, I was around Ali. And I saw Ali sign autographs once after an event that I covered where he's named Athlete of the Century. And I got permission to get his autograph, which I gave to my father. And to take a picture of him. And I left my glasses at the venue. And I came back like an hour and a half later and he was still signing autographs for the employees of the hotel. And just like the impact he had on people. I'd never been around anybody that, like, it was like when he initially walked into the room and Allen Houston was there and one of the Hogs from the Redskins was there and all that, right? It was like he floated into the room and like time stopped. And Kobe was that kind of person. Like when he came into a room, like time stops. And he was just so brilliant. There used to be a Lakers PR lady named Allison Bogley, who she would like tell Kobe, "Hey, they're so-and-so from Google or so-and-so from film company," or he always had like people meeting him after games. And a lot of times after games, I would go wait for him to get a couple more quotes and get my little one-on-one with him. And the same way he prepared for a game is the same way he prepared to meet people. And I would see these people outside the locker room and they'd be really, really nervous. Like, "I'm about to meet Kobe Bryant." But when he walked out, he'd be like, "Hey, Jim, how you doing, Jim? Nice to meet you. Man, what you're doing, Pixar is incredible." Like, was educated on who they were and what they were doing. And then all of a sudden, this nervous person, whew, all the nervousness goes away. "Kobe Bryant knows who I am? Oh, shoot, this is cool," you know? And so he just was just so brilliant, so smart, and he always wanted to learn more. And he was the things that he was in part to do in society, especially with all the racism going in society. I think he could have he has so much respect for people all around the world that I think he could have broken down the need to stop racism in a way that people, even the most racist people, would have been like, well, that's Kobe Bryant, so I'll at least give it a chance and listen to him. And, you know, he had like wrote this book that nobody talks about. It's like the size of an encyclopedia, where he had like superheroes that were of mixed race because he wanted his daughters and other mixed race kids to see role models that were super, that they could relate to. Like, he was just on this different lens. But I'll finish it up. I mean, I could talk about him all day. But the last time I saw him was when he got his jersey retired. And I like got the video of it. And so he's walking out. He just got his jersey retired. There's a thousand things going on. I didn't get a chance to talk to him. And he goes, is that Big Spears over there? Big Spears. He stops what he's doing, walks up to me, and I hadn't seen him like face to face in about a year. He goes, man, the work you're doing at the Undefeated is amazing, man. I'm really happy for you. You're doing great, great work. I'm like, bro, this is your retirement day, man. Like, why are we talking about me? Like, if you watch the video, you could kind of see, like, I was like, this is your day. We honor you and what you've done. And I think I told him, I said, man, I'd love to break bread soon, somewhere, anywhere. And I didn't even talk about basketball. And he said, yeah, I love that too. Dap me up. And that was the last conversation we have, and I have it on video. So it's still hard for me to, one of the hardest things I ever had to do was have to write a column on him hours after what happened. And even on social media, I feel like every day I see a video with him on it. And maybe in time I'll be ready to stop and listen to it, but I'm not there yet. But what I do remember, man, is one of the most fascinating human beings I've ever met in my life.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for sharing that.
Who's next? Wow. Let's see if they live up to this level. Like, who's next? Yeah. Who you got, Bruce?
Oh, I was going to let World B go, and then I'll go after him.
Yeah, World B, follow that up.
The next guy I was going to ask you about was LeBron James.
LeBron James.
What are your thoughts on when you hear that name?
Icon, on and off the court. What he's doing off the court is certainly legendary, which is amazing for, you know, somebody to do what he's doing and empower his friends the way he's empowered his friends. And now you're seeing the next generation, amazing father, certainly in that conversation for greatest of all times. I don't know that there's a wrong answer for that. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder, man. Whoever you think is the greatest is the greatest.
I'm going with Carmelo Anthony.
Man, Melo's special to me too, man, because I covered Melo when he first came into the NBA. And I still haven't had a conversation with him since he retired, but like I go back to with him at 19, cornrows, powder blue jersey, and I'm really, really proud of him, man. I sound like an old man saying I'm proud of another man, but I'm really, really proud of him because he fought through a lot of stuff off the court, and which I think caused him to be an all-star later than he should have. Cause him to maybe not get the attention and the endorsements that he should have early on. But the way he turned it around, I mean, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. I feel like he and the Nuggets are going to – I wish they did it during the finals. But I do think that they're going to, you know, have a kumbaya moment next season. And it's interesting, you know, the Oakland Athletics, they have number 34 jerseys retired. They have Dennis Eckersley, right, and Dave Stewart. They both wore 34. And I believe it's Dennis Eckersley. But anyways, my point is, like, teams can make their own rules. Like, they probably should have never gave Joker that jersey, to be honest. He was a second-round pick. He obviously turned into something amazing. But there's a reason why Scoot Henderson is wearing 00.
Yeah.
He wore zero with the Ignite. He's never going to wear zero for Portland, and nobody else will. Whether Dame is there or not, no one will ever wear that jersey. Or in Dame's case, it's an O. They'll never wear that jersey. And I think Portland is smart. But, like, I don't think anybody – when you're the third highest scorer in franchise history, he shouldn't have had – no one else should wear that jersey. The same way nobody should have got 35 in Oklahoma City either. Anyways, I see a day where Melo's jersey is retired and they're going to do the same for Joker, and they'll be fine.
World B knows a team that has – two number 15s retired for two different guys, don't you, World B?
Absolutely, up there at MSG.
Is it Monroe, and who's the other one?
It's
Dick McGuire.
Oh, Dick really? McGuire, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
We just had this conversation a couple episodes ago.
I know. See, I don't forget anything on 48 minutes. You guys
can be sharp there. Yeah, no, let me in. So Melo is like, for him to be in the book realm, the entertainment realm, the wine realm, and story for another day. But if Melo, if you're listening, you deserve to give me credit for your love for wine, because the person that really introduced him to wine, I really pushed into wine. So I'm going to take credit for that. And I still haven't gotten a bottle yet.
Wow. All right. Well, Mark, we want to thank you again for joining us here today. Obviously, I think a lot of our listeners already are probably following you. So if you don't want to share how to be followed, since people already probably know that, what's something we can look
that.
Out?
I don't assume that. I don't. I'll take anybody that follows me or listens to my work. I appreciate you. I definitely appreciate you. And anytime I meet somebody, I tell them that. So, you know, it's at Mark J, Mark with a C, J Spears on Twitter and on Instagram. So.
Follow you got to come back. You got to come back. There was so much other stuff we never got to with you.
Is that bad? Like, did I no, ramble? See, I feel bad. Like I rambled on too much.
No, I know.
It was great.
This means that you got to come back on again, because here's what we want to talk about next time you come on. I want to talk about that 08 Celtics team, okay? Because you, and I know you could do another hour just on that right now. But I know we've taken up enough of your time, and we don't want to be greedy here. But will you come back sometime? Because you're the best, man. I mean, I almost put an F word in front of that. But you
talk
are
some
the,
more? I'm just you are the my, best. My wheat thins. You got one or two more questions? Or our episode's long, right? You don't...
We're up around an hour, and I don't want to be greedy with your time, but we would be honored if you would come back with us another time.
Why don't I come back after the Hall of Fame thing, and you could ask me about that, how it went.
That's about 45 minutes from my house, by the way. I live.
You're going to be there, right?
Well, I'd love to figure out a way to do it, you know? I'd love to figure out a way to do it. I mean, it would be unbelievable.
You know enough people.
I'll try. I'll see if I can work my magic, but for sure I'll be watching. No question about that.
Nah, I want you to be there, so figure it out.
All right, Mark. All right, Dr. Spears.
Mark, thank you so much again for coming on the show today, having some fun with us, and sharing your stories. We greatly appreciate it.
And World Be Freer, that's a dope name, man. I like that. All right, guys.
And with that, that will do it for this edition of the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back with you next week to be sure you're up to date in 48 on all things around the association. Take care, everybody.